Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Ant, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Anna.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
This week, we're talking about the year 1632. And as is custom and I think law,
yes.
I'd like each of us to give our three-word preview of what we're discussing today. Will.
Big Love Palace.
That's very close to mine, actually. You'll see in a bit. Anna?
I'm sorry. I'm going to need a moment to get over that. My three words are, it totally moves. It totally moves.
Invention of the wheel?
Yeah, we're talking about 250,000 BC, right? When was the wheel invented?
My three words are, no more hanky-panky.
No more hanky-panky. He's done it again with the hyphenation.
You're welcome. I'm learning so much.
I'm really proud of you.
That's the opposite. That's what you'd be told as you're leaving the Big Love Palace.
It definitely moves.
Thank you for coming. No more hanky-panky.
The wheel was invented, by the way, between 4500 and 1550 BC. So I was only off by several orders of magnitude.
Oh, dear. Well, mine's completely made up then.
Really? That recently? Like 10,000 BC?
Yeah, interesting.
No, 4,500.
4,500 BC?
Yeah.
To 15,000 BC?
To 1550 BC.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, that's so recent.
They're just using like ice skates before then or something.
Yeah.
Like skis.
Just sledges.
Wow.
Cool.
Maybe we should request permission to extend the years we're allowed to look at some point
God,
in the future.
God,
should we,
no.
Should we start with 1632?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So let's pretend for a minute if we could cast ourselves back in time to London in the 17th century.
Oh, call blimey, governor.
Exactly that. The wheel everywhere, obviously, has been there.
Yeah.
And I think like iPhone generation one.
Yeah, iPhone one. Yeah.
TikTok's not a thing.
Nope.
At this stage, probably not. Not much to do, therefore. So what do you think is one of the major attractions for the wealthy in London?
The Elgin Marbles.
The Elgin Marbles?
Had they been stolen from the Parthenon at that point?
Probably, yes. Will?
Town wells with cholera in.
that was a close second to what I will be talking about, which is brothels.
Yes.
In particular, I'm going to talk about one very famous, very large, very expensive, and extremely popular brothel.
Nando's.
Yeah, there's loads of jokes here, like, you know, insert your mum joke
kind of thing.
But I am talking about not Nando's Holland's Leger, which was a Dutch/English brothel in London, established in 1603 in a military encampment. Why Dutch?
They're sort of famous for brothels.
Are they? I guess so.
Well, I mean, like the Red Light District.
Clog
and stuff.
On clog action.
Clog on clog action. All those windmills.
All those windmills. Oh. Anyway, Leaguer just means military encampment, by the way. And it was located in a former manor house in the old Paris Garden in Southwark by the Thames, right in the river. And it was located in Bankside, which was then part of what was called the Liberty of the Clink. So the Clink was not under the jurisdiction of London itself, but instead the Bishop of Winchester had control of it. And it was also the home of a very famous prison called the Clink. Hence why we get the term Clink, meaning prison, to this day.
Fascinating. So it was, that's why the prison that's was why. Called the Clink. The wow.
Where, the where is this in London?
Southwark. Yeah.
This is Southwark.
So south of the river.
Yeah.
And because it was there, it was beyond the control of London civil authorities, and thus some things that were banned were allowable there. It's kind of like, you know, putting your boat offshore during Prohibition. So you could gamble
yeah,
and stuff,
I bet yeah. they did.
And it was Bishop Henry of Blois, Blois,
Blois.
Blois. Bishop Henry of Blois.
Bishop Henry. Bishop Henry.
Okay. It turns out I'm an absolute idiot. Okay, Bishop Henry was granted the power to license prostitutes and brothels by King Henry I, which he did judiciously.
The bishop was able to.
So you could be an officially licensed, holding a warrant from the bishop to be a prostitute or run a brothel, and he made a lot of money.
Yeah.
He made a lot of money. And does anyone want to guess what the colloquial name for the prostitutes of the Liberty of the Clink were euphemistically called?
Is it the something of the Clink?
It's not.
Clinkettes?
I'll give you... Okay, the Clinkettes. That's pretty good. Yeah. I will give you I'll give you some permutations. So
thank you.
You've got a location and animal.
Ooh.
So that's the combination.
Okay. The Southern Marmosets.
Southern Marmosets, yes. Will?
The Southwark Hedgehogs.
The Southwark Hedgehogs. I love that video game adaptation.
Don't be so stupid. They were the Winchester Geese.
Is that a real thing?
That is really true.
That's amazing.
And as a result, if you got goosebumps, that was code for venereal disease.
Oh my God.
And if you were pecked to death by wild geese.
Is that where that comes from?
Goosebumps itself was a thing already, if you said, oh, I got a bit of goosebumps, that it could mean that you were a bit chilly, or perhaps went to the Clink for some hanky-panky.
Some Southwark Hedgehogs.
Some Southwark Hedgehogs. It was all out lowly activity in this area, really. Mm. There was a theatre, which was...
the lowliest of activities.
Which was...
The Globe?
The Globe.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly. And there's some other ones there as well. Shakespeare, obviously, big lad about town around the Globe. Christopher Marlowe, etc. You know, all those guys
with
the words and the acting and the emotions and stuff.
Public. I feel like this is the thing where you're about to say, it's all wrong.
No, it's true.
Okay.
excitingly, it was also legal to conduct bull and bear baiting, which was a great draw for people. A bit of theatre, a bit of bear baiting. And it is when you put a bull in a pit or a bear in a pit and they fight dogs in a pit or other animals or sometimes humans.
Ugh.
And it was just a bit grim. But great entertainment for the 17th century. Again, no TikTok, so what were we going to do? So the Liberty was a playground for debauchery, depravity, and I should have another D word, I feel there. Ducks. And thus the Hollands Leaguer was founded and it was established by this matriarch of the brothel called Elizabeth Bess Holland. And so it was kind of named after her, the Hollands Leaguer. She was a phenomenal businesswoman and she was linked with the Dutch underworld. So she was apparently the wife of some shady character in the Dutch underworld.
Interesting. It's convenient that her surname is Holland.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah, so she, it was Dutch.
She established this in the former Knights Templar Manor House, which was a very grand affair, complete with moat and drawbridge and portcullis gate. It was also once owned by Henry VIII's third wife, Jane Seymour.
The only one he ever loved.
The only one he ever loved. So she lived there and owned it. And then she gave it up to the Knights Templar or vice versa. I'm not sure which one.
Vice versa.
Knights Templar probably were first.
Well, Jane Seymour, 1632, she would have been only like a few decades before this. So.
She could have been a night temper too, you're right.
She could have been.
Someone should do the research.
Someone look into that.
But it was decadent and it was opulent, it was expensive, and it did boast that it provided, and I quote, luxurious surroundings, good food, clean linen, and modern plumbing, which is essential, I find, in a brothel.
Yeah, you don't want brothels with bad plumbing.
Oh, yeah. Or the smell is bad enough already, I'm saying. Anyway, it was very high class indeed. The clientele included the likes of King James I and George Villiers, 1st Duke of Buckingham. So, you know, it wasn't like you just...
I mean, that's a pretty she brothel.
If the king's coming to your brothel, yeah, it's going to be a
it's pretty good
brothel, I'm assuming.
That linen was clean.
Great, like, snacks, I'm assuming.
Yeah, they had a pizza oven there, I think.
The sushi that goes around.
Oh, yeah, it was the first sushi conveyor ever.
So the year prior to the year in question, 1632, was the year 1631.
Okay.
But during Shrove Tuesday, Shrove Tuesday being the day before Lent, or Pancake Day, as it's known now. And it was customary for the apprentices of all the guilds. You know, you had the cobblers, you had the candlestick makers, you had the pans,
the butchers, the bakers.
The butchers, the bakers, the
madams.
Mechanics, I guess. But it was famous for them to get like blackout drunk, eat a lot of pancakes, run riot, and just cause chaos. And so they attacked and damaged the brothel. And so it was then sort of this topic that people were aware of, is in the zeitgeist. Mm. And it wasn't kind of just off the fringes anymore. It was kind of like rearing its head. It's like, oh, the brothel's still here and it's been damaged. And, you know, there's lots of revelry and all that kind of stuff. So it was no longer protected by that cloak of anonymity and the liberty. And it was, you know, in December 1961, King Charles I, in an act of like total like prudishness and, you know, decided it needs to be shut down.
Aww.
And so he sent soldiers there. And as we all know, sending soldiers to a brothel is a great idea. Yeah. Definitely.
10 out of 10, no notes.
So what Bess Holland did in response to this, she raised the bridge over the moat and some of the soldiers fell into the water. Some of the soldiers fell into the brothel. They had dramatically different fates for the next... For the next month of the siege, by the way. Yeah, a month.
They got stuck in the brothel for a month.
It was hell on earth for them. They had nowhere to go.
Isn't this literally a Monty Python sketch?
Yeah, like... This definitely happens in Holy Grail. Yeah.
So yeah, the siege lasts for a month until such time as basically the wine ran out. And
this is totally preposterous.
I know, but it happened.
I love this thing that happened so much.
Sorry, how did the siege run out? When the wine ran
out? Basically, yeah, the wine ran out.
Would you keep sieging if you didn't have any more wine?
No.
So ridiculous.
And it was finally finished. They had enough. Said, okay, January 1632, a month later.
Dry January. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're all doing like sober January. For sure. Veganuary.
Yeah, well.
And so Bess Holland, under the cover of darkness, fled and she evaded the authorities. Not much is known about what she went to next, other than it's stated that she did open up another brothel elsewhere. Because, you know it is extremely profitable.
It was her calling.
It's her calling. And yeah, so that shut that down, unfortunately. And as a result, prostitution has ended completely.
That's when it finished.
Yeah, I can't think of another after that.
But if you stand on the steps of the Tate Modern today.
Okay.
So one of the theatres that did exist at the time was the Swan Theatre, which is actually massive, way bigger than the Globe. I think 2,000 people could fit in there.
Wow.
It would have been about 100 yards in front of you. There's a new office block there now, so it's no longer there. And the Hollandlieger would have been a short walk just kind of behind you.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't exist anymore. It is gone. But its name is preserved today in Holland Street, which is close to where it was.
That's very cool.
There you go. And that is the story of the Hollandlieger brothel being shut down.
Every time I go south of the Thames, I get trapped in a brothel. So this is a very resonant story for me.
Well, that says a lot about you.
That is amazing, isn't it?
Why I don't go south of the river.
It's the last something like 8 times, isn't it? That you've been there.
Yeah, no.
Every time.
I know. It's like I have a punch card and I'm waiting for my 10th visit or something. It's bizarre.
Is it? Is it bizarre?
We should do guided tours for board members.
What, of the brothels of South London?
No.
Yes. Of the Tate Modern.
Of the historical area that you have addressed.
Oh, yeah,
and spoken
yeah, we could
about.
Do. Yeah. We totally could do.
There must be.
There must be, yeah.
Pub crawl.
That was an excellent story. I liked that very much. I today am also talking about a brothel.
Really?
No, I'm talking about Galileo.
Okay, you got me there.
Specifically, I'm talking about the Galileo affair, not that kind of affair, and the Inquisition, and the question of which heavenly body rotates around what.
So, I mean, there's definitely a pickup line in there.
Yeah, there's a heavenly bodies joke. Bess Holland would have picked right up on that. Galileo Galilei was born in Pisa in 1564. He thought about joining the priesthood, but his father persuaded him to study medicine instead and deliberately kept him away from maths because physicians earned more money than mathematicians.
Yep, makes sense.
But as has happened to the best of us, Galileo accidentally attended a lecture on geometry and he fell in love.
Hey,
maths.
When that happened.
I know.
Hey, when that happened.
I've been there. He is, of course, famous for his many incredible scientific discoveries and theories. He studied speed and motion and inertia and pendulums and all that good stuff. He made better telescopes. He invented the thermoscope. He invented different compasses.
Is that like a scope, the telescope that was warm to the touch?
So it was really just sort of like
cold nights.
Like
your eyelids were not frozen.
It was actually
frozen.
A mood ring. It was the very first mood ring. Yeah, it was like, oh, I guess I'm feeling angry today. No, it was like a proto-thermometer thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He discovered the four biggest moons of Jupiter, which he named the Medician Stars.
Are you kidding
in
me?
In honor of his patron, Cosimo de' Medici.
Fucking Cosimo again!
He's everywhere! Put that in there just for you, Ant.
Thank you. Thank you.
But he is, of course, most famous for his defense of the theory of the motion of the universe. And at this time, there are two main schools of thought. There was Aristotelian cosmology, or the geocentric, the Ptolemaic model that held that the Earth was the center of the universe and everything revolved around it. This was firmly the position of the Catholic Church. The other school of thought was heliocentrism, the model published by Copernicus in 1543 that had the sun at the center of the universe with the planets orbiting around it.
Which one kind of, what is it?
Well, do you want to know what's really depressing?
What's that?
Because we've talked about this before in the question of the moon landing. I have some poll numbers.
Oh, no.
About how, yeah. So, okay. Spoiler alert. It's heliocentric. Everything revolves around the sun.
That's your opinion.
But I have some depressing poll numbers. I've got for Americans, Britons, and Russian. Mm-hmm. 26% of Americans
think that the
sun revolves around the Earth.
That is insane. Yeah. That is not even, that's just, they've misread the question.
Britain is a little bit better, 19%.
Okay.
And what do you think, Russians higher or lower?
I
think Russians might be better than both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think better than both.
Incorrect.
Oh, okay.
32% That's of crazy. Russians think the sun revolves around the Earth.
That is crazy.
What?
But no. Like, I don't know who they're polling in these.
This
like,
is one in five people in the UK
yeah.
think that the sun
yeah.
rotates around the Earth.
Yeah. Well, because if you look in the sky, it goes, wee! So what are you telling me, that it's the Earth that's spinning? Come on.
Look, for those of you that are listening to this in the UK, just cop on.
Just be better. I think the Earth revolves around Will.
I agree.
Okay, so those are some very depressing poll numbers.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the early 1600s, like, it was hard to prove, right? We had telescopes, but they were fairly primitive, although Galileo made better ones. And he's doing a lot of experiments. There's a lot of measuring parallax of stars and looking at what moves. And as he's doing these experiments, he's realizing, yeah, Copernicus is totally right. The Earth revolves around the sun. And Galileo then starts to become a little more vocal about this belief. In 1613, he writes a letter to one of his students explaining that the Bible was an authority, but on faith and morals, not on science.
Yeah, makes sense because it doesn't really mention anything about science.
Well, so the crux of it all for the church is like the creation story,
yes,
right? And,
yeah,
you know, God made the heavens and the earth, and there are like a couple of two or three lines where if you interpret it very literally, the earth must be fixed. And so they couldn't, it had to be that everything was orbiting around it.
Or, you know, the book was wrong.
Okay, well, you're going to the Inquisition. So, yeah, these letters get circulated widely, including to the Inquisition, who declare in 1616 that heliocentrism is heretical because it contradicts scripture.
I bet he did not expect that.
So he was actually a religious man. I think it's easy to kind of think of these scientists who go against church doctrine as being... yeah, heretics, they're atheists, they're whatever. He was a Catholic, but he just also really liked science. So Pope Paul V tells Galileo that he has to abandon the theory. He can't talk about heliocentrism. He can't publish anything about it. He's just got to, like, renounce it and be quiet.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And for the next several years, he pretty much does that. He doesn't publish anything. He kind of stops his research and his experiments in that realm. But in 1623, one of Galileo's former patrons becomes the Pope, Pope Urban VIII. So Galileo...
Is he, like, in a lot of streetwear?
Yeah. He was just like, he really encouraged graffiti throughout the city. He always had a boombox on his shoulder.
There hasn't been a boombox in 20 years, Anna.
Well, good thing we're talking about 1623.
Fair.
I'm not cool. Everyone, if you haven't figured that out by now, just, you haven't been listening. So Pope Urban VIII is in power. Galileo's feeling a little more bold. Mm. He gets into a little feud with a Jesuit priest named Father Orazio Grassi about comets. As you do.
The number of arguments I've been in about comets.
I know.
That feud you're having is just tedious.
You just
these
need
days,
to end it, you and Hallie.
The time I tripped up and stumbled into a geometry lecture.
I love this.
I was arguing for hours and hours.
So Grassi writes a paper under the pseudonym Sarsi that disputes a lot of Galileo's ideas. And Galileo responds with a work called The Assayer, which is essentially a diss track. It's like he just... picks apart every single argument, slams Sarsi. Do you guys want some examples?
Is it 100%. Like 8 Mile?
It is basically 8 Mile. If you can imagine Galileo in a hoodie with his microphone, you know, up to his
Absolutely
mouth.
Absolutely, I can. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, I'll break you off a little piece. Now, Sarsi expects my mind to be satisfied and set at rest by a little poetic flower that is not followed by any fruit at all.
Wow.
That's one.
Not exactly mom spaghetti, is it?
Two, if Sarsi and others think that certainty of a conclusion extends much assistance in the discovery of some means for realizing it, let them study history.
They're actually quite bad, aren't they?
They're pretty bad, yeah. They're not like pithy.
So it turns out the whole thing is actually, it is really interesting. And the way he picks apart the argument is excellent.
Your commitment to performing it is very admirable.
Thank
by the way.
You. I practice it for hours. I entered a rap battle, actually. I lost. But Pope Urban eats it up. He loves this. And apparently he would read sections of the Assayer out loud to friends at dinner. So, first of all, boring dinners from the Pope. Second of all, Galileo's feeling more confident. The Pope really likes him. So he starts to take up the heliocentrism stuff again. He starts writing a book. Urban actually asks him to include arguments for and against heliocentrism, and the writing is officially authorized by the Inquisition.
Oh.
So, you know, he's thinking, okay, they asked me. Now, the book is published in 1632, the year in question, and it's called Dialogue Concerning the Two Chief World Systems.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You read it?
I was made to read this at some point.
Oh, were you really? Okay. So, as you know, Will, it's a dialogue between three characters. Salviati, who is the Galileo stand-in, who argues for Copernican heliocentrism. Sagredo, an intelligent layman who is initially neutral. And then Simplicio, who argues the traditional Aristotelian view. And if you couldn't tell from the name, Simplicio is the one who is constantly ridiculed by the other two. He trips over his own logic. He makes bad arguments. He actually has the last line of the book, which is that God could have made the universe any way he wanted, and still he made it appear to us the way it does. And this was Pope Urban's favorite argument. So Galileo has essentially put the Pope's words into the mouth of the objectively stupidest character, which was not a good idea.
Yeah.
So Urban is furious. He bans the book. The case goes to the Inquisition. Galileo is called to Rome to defend himself. And in 1633, he's put on trial. They threaten him with torture if he doesn't tell the truth. But he maintains, incredibly, that he kept his promise from 20 years ago not to hold any of the condemned opinions about heliocentrism, even though, like, very
so
clearly
he doesn't hold them. He doesn't hold them.
Yeah. And I mean, the guy's name was Salviati. It wasn't Galileo. Yeah. The Inquisition doesn't buy it. And he's found, quote, vehemently suspect of heresy, which means that he's not formally charged with heresy. So he wasn't executed. But instead, he's sentenced to house arrest, where he remained for the rest of his life. The dialogue was banned, as were all of his other books, past and future. So no more from Galileo.
And how long was he under house arrest for, do we know?
He lived like 10 more years into his 70s.
Yeah.
Because he was already fairly
old. And they were banned for ages.
Yeah. Well, and then this whole thing kind of goes away for like a century or more, because just no one wants to get got by the Inquisition. And so they were banned forever, and also nobody really cared for a while. Then, of course, there is the probably apocryphal legend that after they made him recant his theory, he muttered "Eppur si muove," which means "and yet it moves." So after he's just said, you know, the earth doesn't revolve. Yeah, which is, it's cool. It's probably false, but I do want to believe it, because I think it's just badass. And that means, by my calculation, this makes him the only person to have two episodes of West Wing named for him. The very excellent season 2 episode called Galileo, and the totally forgettable later episode named E Pur Si Muove. And he dies in 1642 after about a decade in house arrest. And three fingers and a tooth were removed from his remains, and they're on display at his museum in Florence.
Why?
If that's a thing you're into.
Why? Why?
I don't know. Like, it turns out there's just like bits of people in museums all over the place.
But that's so bizarre. It's like, oh, he's dead. What would we take? A memento? Should we take like a lock of hair maybe? Or a whole hand? No, let's take three fucking fingers.
And a tooth.
And a tooth.
Yeah. Maybe that's all they could grab while they were
burying. Do you think that
him.
Our fingers and teeth will be in display in any history museums?
One of mine already is.
What? What? Oh, is that when you had your narwhal tusk taken out?
Of course, yes, because you were betusked as a child.
I was betusked as a child. It was a very painful surgery.
And the dentistry.
Nobody talked about my lump anymore, which is good. And that is the whole story of Galileo. Galileo.
Amazing.
We're going to get copyright struck for that.
I wanted to do that the whole time.
This week, I'm going to talk about the Taj Mahal.
Ooh. Ah,
the big love palace. And the Taj Mahal was commissioned in 1631 by the Mughal Emperor Shah Jahan to house the tomb of his favorite wife. That's right, he had more than one wife, Mumtaz Mahal. And it's also got the tomb of Shah Jahan in it himself. So it's where he was interred. And the current name, the Taj Mahal, comes from the Persian words for crown palace. So it literally just means the royal palace.
Yeah.
But at the time, in Perso-Arabic language, which is probably kind of in your area.
Well, I know what Mumtaz means.
What does Mumtaz
mean? So if Mahal means palace, Mumtaz would be like the great one of the palace or the exalted something. So,
So it would mean something like that if it was called that at the time, but it wasn't. So at the time in the Perso-Arabic language they spoke around there, it was called a Rodai Munawari. Which
pass.
I'll pass. Which translates as illustrious tomb, which kind of makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
So it's obviously the Taj Mahal. It's a very famous building indeed, and probably rather than trying to describe the whole thing.
No, could you please just paint a picture?
I'm loving the idea of Will starring in like a tourism advert, like the Taj Mahal, a very famous building indeed.
We don't need to elaborate any further. Come and visit us.
Do you like famous buildings?
Boy, we have one here.
Taj Mahal, famous building.
I didn't like buildings until I accidentally stumbled into an architectural lesson.
It was just mud huts.
Yeah.
So this one sits as the centerpiece of a 42-acre complex that has a mosque in and a guest house and these beautiful gardens, and it's bounded on three sides by this crenellated wall, and it's just the absolute business, basically. It's just top palacing, and it's really good stuff. So
TripAdvisor, 5 out of 5.
It's on like America's Next Top Palace.
America's Next Top Building.
And the construction took about 11 years, and it was essentially completed by 1643. Because if I didn't make it clear earlier, the construction actually started in 1632, which is the question. Yeah. And the work for the rest of it took the whole complex took about another 10 years or so. But here is a question for you. Can you guess how much the Taj Mahal would have cost today if we were to build it today?
It's got to be...
Have a think. Ant.
I'm going to say, in today's money, it's going to be like £340,000.
£340,000 sterling.
One of the most beautiful and elaborate buildings of all time.
No, serious answer, £5 billion. I'm going to say
billion. £5 billion. How much did Crossrail overrun?
We could have had another Taj Mahal.
For international listeners, Crossrail is a major rail and construction project.
Yeah, but it's really worth it because they're saving 12 minutes on a journey to a city that no one goes to.
I'm going to say, Ant said £5 billion.
Uh-huh.
I think they did it on the cheap. I'm going to say £2 billion.
You are closest, Anna. The answer is £1 billion.
Wow.
Pounds.
Wow.
Almost bang on, or $1.2 billion US.
I mean, that's like, it's pretty good.
Pretty good. Although I would imagine the cost of the land might be huge these days, and obviously in those days maybe super cheap. But yeah, that's how much it cost. And it now attracts about 7 million visitors a year and was declared a winner of the new Seven Wonders of the World initiative.
Cool.
The winner of it. So pretty good achievement.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And anyway, so back to poor Shah Jahan. So he made the decision to build the palace when his wife died on the 17th of June of that previous year, 1631. And she had died giving birth, which of course is tragic. But something that's quite interesting is how many children she'd had. So can you guess how many children she'd had?
Seven?
14. She was on a 14th child. So a very good effort. Obviously tragic, but like
she must be
an extremely good effort.
Jesus, she deserves a building.
And it is built on a parcel of land to the south of a walled city of Agra. And the scaffold was so enormous to build the thing that the foreman expected it to take years just to dismantle the scaffold.
Yeah.
So according to legend, Shah Jahan then decreed that anyone could keep the bricks taken from the scaffold. And so all the peasants swarmed onto it and dismounted it in a single night.
That's incredible.
I mean, that's smart. That's just good, smart. Good business sense.
Crowdsourcing. And
crowdsourcing. Yeah, they recruited a bunch of peasants on Fiverr and said, go at it.
It's constructed using materials from all over India and Asia. And it's believed that more than 1,000 elephants were used to transport building materials. Some 22,000 labourers, painters, embroidery artists, and stone cutters took part in the construction.
That's a lot of people. A lot of people. A lot of elephants.
And there is a, obviously, the, well, if you were to look at it, it looks mostly to be made of translucent sort of white marble. And that was all brought from Makrana in Rajasthan. There's jasper from the Punjab, jade and crystals from China. There's turquoise from Tibet.
Sorry, who's Jasper?
Yeah, was Jasper one of the elephants?
Jasper's from the Punjab. He's, I think he's the foreman.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's sapphire from Sri Lanka and all sorts from loads of places. And in all total, there's about 28 different types of semi-precious and precious stones inlaid
there's
in the
dirt
white
dirt from
marble.
England.
And some dirt from England.
Dirt.
You're welcome.
Pure British mud.
Yes.
There's
mud.
Pebbles from Brighton Beach.
Actually, there's actually a millionaire from Ireland that sold mud to Americans because
really,
yeah. So
won't
if you want to like bury someone that died from Irish heritage, you could buy a bit of the Irish soil and cast it on their
that's
grave.
Such a good idea.
And so we just package up dirt and then ship it across, killing the planet, obviously, and make a fortune.
You've got to
even better,
that
just
hustle,
like
though.
Dig it up in New Jersey
that's
or something.
Probably what it was. That's probably what it was. Yeah.
So there have been, unfortunately, a bunch of threats to the place over the years, including like the rising water level and when someone thought it would be a good idea to build an oil refinery right next door.
Oh, Jesus.
But they've managed to protect it, the palace from all of those.
And is it on, sorry, on the rising water level, is it on the water?
Yeah, it's surrounded by like some pretty high water.
Okay,
and, like, marshlands.
Yeah, cool.
So there was also a bunch of controversy in 2017 when the Uttar Pradesh government didn't include it in its official tourist book.
Oh, wow.
About the Uttar Pradesh.
They just forgot the biggest thing.
It's kind of
no,
a
they
big
didn't,
one.
They didn't forget. So it's like it's slightly wrapped up in some, and this is like fairly controversial in India these days, but like, you know, if you're on the more like Indian nationalist side of the spectrum, of the political spectrum, then this is like, this is a Mughal monuments rather than a Hindu thing.
Yeah.
So it's, gotcha. You know, it's wrapped
so
up in all of that.
Yeah.
So a member of parliament at the time called it a blot on the country's culture. So it's not universally admired, actually.
Wow.
Interestingly.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's fascinating because like, I guess it's hard to strip all of that away, but man, if you look at the thing, it's pretty beautiful.
It's just very cool. So most, yeah. And I think most people would agree. It's just a very fascinating and beautiful and great building.
Have you guys visited?
I've never been.
I've been to the oil refinery next door.
Of course. You were the chief drillman.
Yeah, when it was the oil tycoon.
Yeah.
But then I got out early. I didn't really see it going.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
What, oil?
Yeah, oil. Yeah. Worst investment ever.
Will, did you work on its construction?
I was. I advised the foreman.
You
I remember
did?
Him
okay.
as a child.
Jasper.
As a child, yes, I taught him everything he knows about lapis lazuli.
Yeah.
How to incorporate it into white marble.
I've worked it out, by the way. If we didn't do HS2, we could have 42 Taj Mahals.
In a line along the route.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could just walk.
Arguably, that's better for the people of this country.
It could potentially be.
God, it's so good. Again, if you are not in Britain or following British politics, just Google British government rail.
That's it. That's it. Just British government rail.
Poor planning.
British government rail, Taj Mahal.
Jasper, the elephant.
Big question.
It was such a narrow vote that they passed. They had that option. They said 42 Taj Mahals or a rail.
Or a railway.
And it went down to the wire, didn't it? It was remarkably close in Parliament.
Really
go back and read the Hansard on it, like American listeners. There's so much to learn about British culture.
God, I love how the show educates people. We've done a great job today, boys. All right, well, clearly that is everything you could possibly be expected to know about the year 1632.
That's right. And we find it extremely helpful and extremely happy when people take the time to tell their friends about the podcast. I think it's just worth mentioning that when people do that, it's very valuable. And we would like you to do that again, please, if you possibly can.
It makes us happy. Also, send us emails. It makes me really happy when we get emails.
Yeah, email Anna.
Yeah, just email me personally.
I'm like not that bothered either way.
Should we tell people what the email address is?
Randomlygeneratedhistory@gmail.com.
Randomlygeneratedhistory@gmail.com. And yeah, if you haven't also left a review yet or left a 5-star rating, that's also really helpful.
You know
all these things
doing?
Just help people find the podcast. It's more helpful than you think.
We should read out some reviews because there's some crackingly funny ones as well.
There are some really good
ones.
If
you leave a funny 5-star review, you might be read out. If you leave a 4-star one comparing us to an Austrian podcast about burgers or something like that, we're not going to read it. Matt, that's you.
Great. So that means that's all that's left now that we've threatened our listeners is to choose another, our next year. So I think Ant is continuing his apprenticeship with the RNG.
Yes. Sorry. Let me just light the incense.
Yep.
Laser. It's not enough dry ice just yet. Let it billow for a bit. Okay. And yeah, we're good. And just to remind you, this is choosing a year between 1000 BCE and 2000 CE. And let me just ignite the fuse. And the year is 1393.
Oh. Have we had one?
We've had 1347, I believe.
Yes.
But this is great.
I don't remember that one at all.
1347?
Yeah, I can't remember. Was I there?
You were there. Yeah, I think that was, well, whatever. People can go
People
look
sometimes
it up.
Ask if we have learnt much making this podcast. The answer is categorically no. We forget instantly everything we've
learned. I mean, we can't be expected to listen to our own podcast. Yeah. There's not enough hours in the day.
But you should. I tell your friends and they should too.
Great. So 1393, we'll be on it. We'll be fresh. We'll be ready to go. And we'll see you then.
See you next week.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.